Continuing our 1968 Revolution Rewind, we hear civil rights leader Bayard Rustin from a 1968 speech entitled The Future of Minorities in America, where he looks at the changing roles of African Americans in society.
I am much more concerned with urgency of a moral and political commitment than I am concerned with anything else, because the time is in fact short, lest this society be torn asunder. Let us face it, ladies and gentlemen, we have never been faced with a greater crisis in the United States than we are faced with today. Perhaps the compromise following the Hayes-Tilden election in 1877 is a parallel. People at that time had been absorbed for a number of years with the question of what are we to do with black people. They were turning their back. There was a backlash. People in the North no longer wanted to take any responsibility. The Union Army was withdrawn from the South, and Negroes were thrown into second-class citizenship. And the nation, and more seriously than second-class citizenship for Negroes, the nation was thrown into a new chaos, affecting civil liberties, affecting the nature of our political institutions, giving further weight to the most reactionary elements in our country politically, fastening a system of seniority in the Senate, which meant that the leadership was given to men who, while brutalizing black men, were more effectively brutalizing the entire nation and making it impossible for the United States to move into the 20th century with the kinds of social legislation which was essential not only for black people, but for all Americans. I'm ashamed to be an American when I look at the health services of Britain and Norway and Sweden and Denmark, those poor little countries who can provide medical services when we are very rich and do not even take care of our people. The fact is that all over this, nation, the incidence of child death, mother death, tuberculosis amongst Negroes is increasing as it declines amongst white people. The fact is, my friends, since 1954 decision, which was to have given Negroes a second chance to remain citizens, the education has declined, and there are, as has been told you this morning by Mr. Hutchins, for a variety of reasons, not only segregation and discrimination, more Negro youngsters in segregated schools than before 1954. Unemployment has almost doubled as compared with what it was for Negro males since 1954. And the slums are there, but their character has changed. There are more rats, more roaches, and more despair in them than before. Therefore, I proclaim that in looking to the next 50 years, we must in fact look to tomorrow. Because if we wait 3 years before something is really done, then we are talking about the next 53 years. And if we wait 10 years, we are talking about 60 years. Now, my friends, the problem has been from the very founding of this nation that we made a separation between individual morality and social ethics, and we are still continuing to do so. Thomas Jefferson awoke one night after having a horrible dream in which he saw the nation being torn asunder over the problem of slavery. He behaved as an individual moralist and as one not at all concerned with social ethics. He got up the next morning and wrote a will in which he manumitted his slaves upon his death. What he should have done was to have seen the problem as a social problem and he should have gone into the Congress of the United States to have done something about the problem of slavery politically, rather than merely to have solved his conscience. Again, later in our history, the abolitionist, looking on the problem of slavery purely as a moral problem, were at great pains to express their moral conviction that men should not be slaves. But one of the fundamental reasons that the Reconstruction period failed was that the abolitionist separated individual morality, there ought not to be slaves, people ought not to hold them, from the social ethic and therefore a social responsibility during their campaigns and at the end of that war to have come up with a social, political, and economic program that truly would have freed men. What they did was to become weary. And therefore, their individual morality was not effective. Now, my friends, what I am trying to say is that the moment is now to act. We do not have time. These riots, which result from the nature of the frozen violence of our society, are not seen as having come about as a result of the frozen violence of the society. And I am here to say that though I oppose and vigorously have spoken out against rioting to Negroes, I will say to white people, the rioting will, that limited degree of fluid violence which we see in our streets is as nothing compared with the inability of this society to move and the frozen violence which that movement fails to dissolve. But the problem is also not, gentlemen, a problem as to whether you can plan, for I am sure you can, so long as you recognize that in all your plans, if you do not take into consideration the will and the advice of those for whom you are planning, you will be in trouble. Because the revolt through which we are going is not merely a revolt about housing, schools, and jobs. I do not believe that rioting has occurred because the schools are bad, or because there is unemployment, nor because there are slums. Man is capable of enduring hardship. What man cannot endure is hardship where hope is absent. The rioting occurred because men do not believe that in this society, tomorrow, or a week from next Thursday, or next year, that they will find a job, and decent housing, and decent schools. The rioting is a failure of this society which has robbed the poor, by which I mean the black and white poor, for the white poor will not eternally remain in inaction, because we have robbed the poor of hope. Now that planners may be able to do something about it if they understand that the problem is fundamentally a political one. Because with all the brains in this nation, with all the consideration of what the poor think about what should be planned, no plan that is meaningful can be put into operation in the present political atmosphere. The problem is fundamentally a political one. First of all, we do not have a non-communist, democratic left which can become the political vehicle for social change. The problem with all the marches about Vietnam is that the more people who go into the streets, I don't want to put it badly, that as more and more people go into the streets, there is more and more escalation. Why? Because neither of the existing political parties can utilize that sentiment against the war, politically organize it in a meaningful way, so that the bigger and bigger the demonstrations get, the more and more less effective they become, because the problem is a political one. Secondly, in regard to the political problem, we in America reject planning except for the private sector of the economy, so that what we become and what we advocate is democratic socialization for the rich and rugged individualism for the poor. Wherein what we have to face is that none of the problems can be solved unless, number one, we change our basic priorities and reorder them. It is not, to me, more important to go to the moon than to do something about Harlem. It is not, to me, more important to do something about anti-missile missiles, on which we are now prepared to spend many more billions of dollars than they tell us we are. That is not more important to me than what happens in Watts. And we must see that the crucial problem of our time is the problem of the underclass and our ability to make it a responsible class by giving it hope and by bringing it into the working class. For a lumpen proletariat never has been organized, never will be organized, will always be destructive and fundamentally more destructive to itself than to anyone else. And therefore, the only means by which we can do this is bringing them into the working classes. We have to see that not only must we reorder our priorities, but that there must be planning on a national scale. And we must see that there must be a basic economic program around which we organize to build the political strength to do this. I believe that we must have full employment. I believe that we can only have full employment with some redefinition of work. I believe that the notion that we need to have a guaranteed income is a ridiculous notion. I am only for a guaranteed income for those who are too young, too old, or too sick to work. For the rest, we can find work if we are able, willing, and able. There must be free education. And not only free education, but a totally new concept of the nature of education. The government must become the employer of last resort. The government must be the house builder of last resort. There must be new towns. There must be totally free medical care for those who need it. We must clear the air and clear our rivers, and in the process of doing these socially needed things, put men back to work. Let me say in conclusion, my friends, the paper which I have written is on morality and civil rights, and I would just like to point out to you one or two things. This nation, all of us, I do not feel so guilty as some people, but I cannot extricate myself from some responsibility. This nation is teaching the poor that they ought to riot lest they get nothing. The way to get money out of OEO is to go in the spring telling them you're going to have a riot in the summer. In Chicago, Martin Luther King was there for a year and a half and got a piece of paper which the city fathers have not yet recognized. When young Negroes riot because they are too warm in the summer, Mr. Daley, a week later, goes about distributing $8 sprinklers. And the young people turn to Dr. King and say, "You see, Daddy, you and your nonviolence roll over. We got our sprinklers because the only thing Whitey understands is violence." May I say, therefore, in conclusion, that I trust planners will, from the beginning, associate themselves with the poor, work with the poor, find out what they want, what kind of homes they want to live in, what kinds of work they want to do. For the psychological nature of the revolt through which we are going is that I believe there is time if we give people the feeling that we are listening to them, appreciating them, and accepting them as real people, black or white.